Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we're going to discuss a transition that may not need to be made. That's moving elderly patients from nursing homes to hospital care. Missouri's been in the vanguard of a multi-state program to determine if and when such transfers are really necessary. The research shows that often the change can and should be avoided. At stake, quality health care for the patient, significant savings for taxpayers. Seven sites around the country were selected for the study, including the University of Missouri Sinclair School of Nursing, called the Missouri Quality Initiative for Nursing Homes. The project was conducted under the direction of Marilyn Rance, nursing professor at the school and an expert on long-term care issues. Professor Rance joins us from sister station KBIA. Marilyn, nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Well, let's begin at the beginning and explain to folks how and why these transfers can be a problem.
Well, when people experience the transfers from the nursing home into the hospital, oftentimes what happens is that they become it's very stressful. It adds an additional layer of stress on someone who's already quite ill. And with that additional stress and the change in their environment, it becomes even more physically and mentally demanding for the person. So if it can be managed within the person's environment, their own home, which is eventually what people start to consider the nursing home if they're living in a nursing home or assisted living, if they can stay there and recover within their own environment with staff who know them, it goes much faster and much quicker. And that's been our experience in conducting this research and embedding capable healthcare providers, advanced practice nurses, and the support team to support them. You embed those people, and it's amazing how well older adults can do being managed within their own home environment.
What are the kinds of medical conditions that would prompt these transfers or had been prompting these transfers?
Sure. Typically, they are exacerbations of chronic illnesses such as heart failure. That's one common chronic illness exacerbation. Or it's an acute infection like a urinary tract infection, a respiratory infection, or some other kind of acute condition that happens when people have chronic illnesses or they become frail as they get older and perhaps near the end of their life.
So the nursing home would then suggest or implement a transfer because the homes themselves are unable and capable of dealing with these conditions?
Well, actually, what we're helping the homes do is develop their own capacity to be able to manage these folks well within their own environment, within the home. And if we increase their capacity to do it, people do much better. And that's been the goal of the project. We know that the stress of the transfer is very demanding on the person and can result in a lot more physical and functional decline. If you talk to people who have been hospitalized and you talk to families of older people who have been hospitalized, they'll tell you, gee, mom just hasn't been the same or dad hasn't been the same since they've experienced that hospitalization. They've never gotten their strength back. They've never regained their ability to be able to walk again. So what we do in the intervention that we put into place in the MOQI initiative is to embed an advanced practice nurse in each one of these 16 participating nursing homes. We embed them full-time working in the nursing home. And there are 16 of those around the St. Louis area that have been recruited in this project. And the project's been going now since 2012. So we've had quite a bit of time to watch how things go and to figure out effective strategies to make it go even better. So what happens is that the nurses work with the staff, and the staff detects things faster. So we start detecting illnesses and changes in chronic conditions earlier in the process before someone becomes really acutely ill and they need to be hospitalized. You can treat the condition much earlier in the process and do quite well within the nursing home and treat that early there and avoid that transfer. The other thing that can happen is that we teach the staff and reinforce to the staff and the families that much diagnostic testing can be done within the nursing home without the need to transfer to hospital. Sometimes families think that there's something magic that's going to happen when mom needs to go to the hospital, but what actually, they may need a few tests, that's true, but we may be able to get those tests, those diagnostic tests, at the nursing home, get the diagnosis quicker, and be able to treat them there in their own environment with their own staff.
Does this become somehow more expensive for the nursing home? I mean, when we talk tests, we're talking equipment, and sometimes that can be very expensive.
Well, it can get somewhat more expensive for the nursing home, and that led us into the phase two testing that we're in the middle of now, or we're actually 1 year into now. We have 3 more years on this on the testing of a billing intervention for the homes to be able to bill for those additional services. But when you compare the total cost of rehospitalizing the person and all of the functional decline in the rehab they have to experience after the hospitalization, the total costs to the healthcare system are reduced by millions and millions of dollars, because the dollars that are needed for adding a little more service on the nursing home side are much fewer than the expenses of the transfer to hospitalization.
Well, you've been at this now, I think you said, for about 5 years. You have reason, I gather, from some of the things I've read about the program to be very optimistic about how well it's working.
You know, I've been a nurse now. Oh, dear, I hate to tell you how many years, but a lot of years, over 40 now. And I have had the opportunity to see many, many changes. And being a nurse who's worked in long-term care for many years, it's exciting to see some possibilities to improve quality of care, reduce total costs to Medicare and Medicaid, and be able to help people get better quality. And they're more satisfied where they are. They realize, having had multiple experiences, because most of them usually have, of the decline that they experience when they go through an acute illness and end up in the hospital for several days.
Might I be correct in assuming that under the system as it has existed with these transfers taking place, that often, perhaps very often, those patients who go to the hospital do not return?
Well, sometimes that is the case, and that is certainly not what one would hope when you are at end of life. At end of life, people, if you clarify with them early in the admission to a nursing home, or clarify at home. This is good advice for people who are living at home now, who are getting older, and really for all of us. My husband and I have had these conversations a lot, and we both have our documented healthcare directives, and we've pre-filled everything out so that the other person knows what it is I want to have done, or what it is he wants to have done or not done. And you need to make those decisions at a time when you are healthy and you can objectively look at it and not put your family in a position of making decisions at a time when you're critically ill. And what we learn is that people make excellent decisions for themselves, and it's the one that they want. By and large, most people want to stay at home. And if they're living in a nursing home, that means they want to stay there mm-hmm. in that home that they refer to. But by and large, people like to stay at home, be that in the nursing home or at home. And it's important that we know what your end-of-life wishes are and that you document those and be prepared that that when the time comes, it's going to go a whole lot smoother. And the family's going to feel a whole lot better about the impending death if one can be have their wishes known and have them honored throughout their end-of-life experience.
We should probably back up just a little bit. I have to take a break in a moment, but back up and say that this whole project was the result of a grant. I suppose the grant was sponsored by the Center for Medicare Medicaid Services. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's the Medicare Medicaid Services of the Innovation Center within that department federally in Baltimore.
And they had certain objectives they wanted to be met, one of which is the one that you've just described here, the advanced directives and the importance of that. Why don't we, because I have to take the break, let's do that now, come back and we can talk about some of the other objectives and what was behind the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services desire to get some improvement in this area. We'll do that in just a moment. My guest from Columbia, Missouri and KBIA is Marilyn Rance, the University of Missouri Sinclair School of Nursing. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, we'll take that too at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We are talking with Marilyn Rance, the University of Missouri Sinclair School of Nursing professor, and we're talking about a program that she's been heavily involved in for the last several years, which is designed to limit the number of transfers of people from nursing homes to hospitals. The reason for that is multifold, and we've already discussed some of the issues there. We'll continue the conversation with Marilyn Rance. Marilyn, let's go back to the motive on the part of the folks at Medicare to get this program underway. What precisely were they trying to do here? Was it just to save money?
No, there's obviously a need to save money. That is true. There was a line of research that several people around the country participated in, looking at the types of hospitalizations that occurred for older adults and classifying those and discovering that we had anywhere from 40% to 60% of all hospitalizations were actually unnecessary hospitalizations. Oh. And that's the part that they wanted to correct. It's not to restrict the care of hospitalizations for older people, not at all. In fact, it's to get them better care, because if we do things earlier and we do things better up front and we can provide the care and services that nursing homes can provide, then we can avoid unnecessary hospitalizations. They're still going – CMS clearly identified that there are still always going to be necessary hospitalizations. But when people experience unnecessary ones – the functional decline and the disability that occurs, and unfortunately, all the complications that can occur that result in death, and it's premature death. They wanted to stop that process. So that was the primary objective of their interest. I think there was some pressure from consumers also that consumers were dissatisfied with the way this was working, and that they also knew that they were experiencing some unnecessary disabilities that resulted from unnecessary hospitalizations.
As you've already pointed out, a hospital stay is more expensive than a nursing home stay generally. And what this boils down to, again, as I understand from your literature, is that this represents potentially a huge savings for us, the taxpayers.
That's right. It is a huge savings for the taxpayers. It rolls up into billions and billions and billions of dollars nationwide.
Now you're talking some serious
yes.
consequences.
Yes, we're talking some significant savings that can be used in other ways to better meet the healthcare needs of our citizens.
Does Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act work into this at all in any way? I mean, now there's a great debate, obviously, about where that's going and how, if in fact, it may or may not be changed. Has this come into play at all in this?
Well, there are some connections with the rehospitalization of people and the Affordable Care Act did mandate some examination of and conducting research that would help direct CMS better on how to fund programs and how to build programs that would reduce avoidable costs. And this was one of their major avoidable costs. That's why they planned the 7-site research. And we were fortunate enough to be one of the 7 sites here in Missouri. And to our credit, the design of our particular project has resulted in some of the actually the best performing outcomes among all of the 7 sites. We were able to affect better, lower costs than the other 7 sites, better outcomes for people, higher satisfaction for the nursing home residents. So embedding APRNs in the nursing home environment, providing a support team for them to be successful in that environment, has proven to be among the 7 tested, the best intervention so far. And there are some changes that need to take place for this to work nationwide and better across the whole state of Missouri. Because for it to work well across the whole state of Missouri, we need to change the regulations that over-regulate APRN practice, particularly within nursing homes.
Well, congratulations to you for having done such a good job. What happens at the end of the 8 years? Are the various projects kind of become lumped together, taking the best from each and then come up with a composite program of some sort?
Our 7 sites get together in person once a year, and then we have ongoing communication and connections that are made every month, actually. And we work very closely with CMS staff. So I think what will eventually happen is that yes, they will take the best components from all of them for a national implementation. I'm certainly hoping that is the case and that APRNs will be widely accessible in all nursing homes across the country.
I'd like to talk about that for a moment. The APRNs, the Advanced Practice Registered Nurses, I guess, is what that stands for. How are these special? And you're talking about embedding them in the nursing homes. What qualifications do they have above and beyond an RN?
Yes, they are master's and doctorally prepared nurses. Most of them at this point nationwide have master's degrees in nursing, and a growing number of them now have doctoral degrees, DNPs, in nursing practice. At the University of Missouri, we have a DNP program and prepare nurses for this role in across the whole healthcare continuum. They're used a lot in primary care. They are used a lot in hospital care, and they're used. They are now being used more and more in nursing home care. The thing that needs to happen within the environment of nursing homes is some changes within the Medicare regulations need to take place, and our team is making those regulation those recommendations nationally that will go to people in Washington to get their assistance in changing. Just a few minor changes in those regulations need to be made, and nurses, APRNs, the advanced practice nurses, will be able to be funded within each nursing home in the country.
It sounds like the APRNs are just one step or two shy of a full MD.
Well, when you have a well-prepared advanced practice nurse, it's not that you are attempting to not have physicians available. You do want to have physicians available. Advanced practice nurses are educationally prepared to deliver and make decisions and provide the care and services that are very that have the right outcomes for primary care, that have the right outcomes for assistance within hospitals and within nursing homes. So the two complement each other, and they're used together in collaborative ways so that as the APRNs manage very common situations, that most situations can be handled in that way, then there are specialist physicians who can handle and that the APRN refers to be able to handle more complex, unusual cases. But primarily what happens most in healthcare is pretty usual stuff. The most of things that happen to people. And in nursing homes, that tends to be the case. And it improves the assessment skills within the nursing home of the staff so that the direct care staff who are always there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, can do a better job when something isn't right for the person. So one of the tools that we use is called Interact, and this is there are two tools primarily that we've used within that program, and it's to help people recognize early illness. And the one is called Stop and Watch, and our facilities teach families how to use it. Of gee, if something's not right with mom, you tell us. We stop and we watch and we look at this. And then there's another tool that the nurses use called SBAR, which is a tool that helps them collect all the right information when somebody has a change in condition, so that they gather all the information and they consult with the physician, or they may be working with another advanced practice nurse in the case of a collaborative practice in our state.
I have a couple of other points I'd like to make, but before doing so, we'll bring in Susan, who is calling from Illinois, who wants to get into our conversation. Let's bring her in. Susan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Well, thank you very much. I believe that we know that many nursing homes are short-staffed. My big issue is the wishes of the resident. It seems that in many situations, not only in nursing homes, but beyond a certain or over a certain age, you may not be heard. What you say is not necessarily heard. And I don't know that nursing homes really want to know what the resident wants. The family sometimes doesn't want what the resident wants. I mean, there can be disagreements on that issue, and it's I think it's very important to uphold the rights of the resident. Of course, you know, there can be complications. There might be communication problems.
Sure, Susan, I think we have the point, and our time is beginning to wind down. But Marilyn, I think that goes back to the advance directive, does it not?
That's right. That's right. The residents wishes trump in those situations. If the resident has a very clear advance directive, their wishes will override those of the family. However, there are conflicts, and there are situations that have occurred where families have not gone along with resident wishes. And one would hope that you would have lots of conversation with your family members so that that doesn't happen to you. That's why you have to do those things ahead of time. That's why it's such a key component with the work that we do with advanced practice nurses and their support team. There's a social work component to this that is key in this support team that helps the families and works with difficult situations where families are not communicating. And that needs to be in place too. There's another component that's technology, because we want those wishes to all be clearly communicated using technology so that your wishes are recorded and they're carried through as you move from place to place or just staying within your own environment. So both of those are very key components for that we have built in with the APRN as early illness detection and in care management of that person. You've got to have the social work component. You've got to have end of life, and you've got to have help in managing difficult family situations so the family can deal with the fact and be comfortable with the choices that that resident has made, because the resident wishes are priority for not only the nursing home but in the home too.
Our time is winding down, but one final point I would like to make, because we spoke earlier of the objectives of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Three objectives. One we've discussed has been the advance directives just discussed, and obviously avoiding unnecessary transfers. The other was to reduce the use of antipsychotic medications. Just address that for a moment, if you would.
Sure, and we were very successful at that. We do a medication. The APRNs do a medication review they do one every quarter for every 3 months on every resident, and their objective is to simply get medications in total reduced, but particularly to see that there are no antipsychotic drugs inappropriately used for any resident in this study. And we've markedly reduced those antipsychotics.
Well, congratulations to you and yours once again for the work that you're doing and continue to do. And looks like you've had a very successful project here in the state of Missouri. Thank you, Professor Marilyn Rantz.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you. Marilyn Rantz of the University of Missouri Sinclair School of Nursing. Coming up, from caring for the elderly to helping children navigate new beginnings. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.